WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Over 100,000 obese people had bariatric surgery this year to decrease the size of their stomachs. The procedure has attracted a lot of attention through public figures who have had it, including my guest Al Roker of the Today Show. Since having the surgery last year, he's lost over 100 pounds, about a third of his body weight. We invited him to talk with us about how this procedure has changed his life, his body, and his love of food. He actually just published a second cookbook, Al Roker's Hassle-Free Holiday Cookbook. Al Roker, welcome to Fresh Air. Your new book is a cookbook of holiday recipes. The winter holidays are, among other things, occasions to overeat. I mean, that's one of the things they're famous for. People, like, stuff themselves at holiday dinners. Are they a difficult time for you now because there's such a limit to what you can eat?
Well, actually, no. They're, in a sense, easier in that I know what my capacity is, and if I exceed that, I won't feel good. And so, in a way, it's somewhat freeing in that I have a little, and I mean little bit of much of what's on the table, and then I move on. So it's pretty freeing.
What's the difference between the signals your body sends you now and the signals your body sent you before the surgery?
Well, I don't think it sent any signals, and now there's a definite signal that, you know, you're full. And if you eat any more, you're going to be uncomfortable. And if you eat any more than that, you're going to be ill. But I also have to say right up front that I don't recommend this. I don't recommend the surgery. I don't endorse the surgery. I had a gastric bypass. It worked for me. It may not work for whoever is listening and considering it. It's a dangerous operation. 1 in 200 people die from this every year. A lot can go wrong.
When you were deciding whether or not to go through with the surgery, what was your process of deciding whether you would take the risks or not?
Well, I just decided I was going to do it, and I interviewed several doctors, probably four, in the New York area, and whittled it down to the one that I was most comfortable with. But I didn't tell really my wife until I decided on that doctor and had already scheduled it, and then told her, and then Deborah said, okay. And the irony is she had done a number of stories on this surgery and had suggested, said, well, you know, I just interviewed Carney Wilson. Now maybe a year earlier, I said, nope, 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 nope. And I obviously wasn't ready for it at that time. And I made the decision in January of 2002, I'm sorry. I had decided, okay, I'm going to do this. And I didn't tell any other than my producer and my wife and actually my representative, because I wanted him to know why I was doing this. I didn't tell my family. I didn't tell any of my friends. Didn't tell anybody. Because it was such a drastic surgery, and I didn't want any negativity or anybody saying, oh, what about this? What about that? I'd already made up my mind, and I didn't want anything getting in the way. So I went ahead I had scheduled vacation, and luckily the surgery happened on a Friday, March 15th, and I was back to work the following Monday.
Wow.
You know, a week later.
Huh. So I've read that you can eat about a cup of food at any meal. Is that about right?
Yeah, a cup and a half, I guess, depending. I guess there are ways to bypass this, you know, in that you can, no pun intended, you can, you know, eat small meals constantly so that you're constantly digesting. You can eat, you know, you can drink milkshakes, I suppose, if you can stand that, you know, because a high sugar, high fat food can, or high salt, high fat food can, you know, trigger nausea. And I've had that happen maybe two or three times. And once you have it happen a few times, you don't want, it's like the old, you know, doctor, it hurts when I do that. Well, don't do that. But that said, to me, the trade-off is acceptable. You know, I still eat what I just, for example, you know, when I was doing we entered the Memphis in May rib championship for the Food Network this past May. And in the old days, I could eat a rack and a half of ribs with no problem. Now, maybe three ribs, tops. more like two. And that's about it. And but yet, I'm satisfied when it's done.
Would you have been satisfied after the rack and a half?
Yeah, I guess so, just because I would have been so full. And plus, besides that, there would have been the sides of some baked beans, coleslaw, stuff like that. You know, so it's, you know, it's a different way of eating. It's a way that most normal-sized people actually already do inherently. My wife, who's on ABC 2020, Deborah Roberts, is, you know, she's like a size two. And she overeats at times. You know, she'll eat a big meal. But, you know, the thing that a thin person or a normal-sized person knows to do that most of us who are overweight don't know what to do is that, you know, she then will throttle back over the next couple of days and she'll exercise. And that's the other component to this. You know, you have to exercise. I mean, it's not – this by itself is not a magic bullet. I mean, I work out before the Today Show 5 days a week and sometimes a sixth day because that's what I need to do. Because it keeps muscle tone and I just feel better when I do it. I mean, I still hate it. I hate exercise. I mean, I have a trainer 3 of those 5 days, and my goal is to get really fit enough to at some point just beat the crap out of them. just really whap them, just drop them like a bag of dirt.
As you've pointed out, if you're addicted to alcohol or to a drug, you can stop taking it. You can stop drinking, but you can't stop eating. So the So you're always around the thing of temptation.
Well, you're not only always around it; you actually need it to survive. I mean, you don't have to drink alcohol or Bloody Marys or whatever to live. You don't have to take crack to live, but you do have to eat.
How many pounds have you lost?
About 120.
It's a lot.
Yeah, you know, I always say to my wife, "I've lost you." You know.
Do you feel like your self-image has changed in any fundamental way?
No. It took a while to catch up, from who you see yourself as. I mean, I still basically, I mean, still to a certain point expect, when I talk about weight issues, I still count myself as a person who's overweight. Because actually, technically, I probably am, not morbidly obese anymore or even obese, but, at 200 pounds, and if you follow the charts, I'm probably still 20 pounds overweight, maybe 25 pounds overweight. But, I mean, I look at old pictures or I look at old video and I go, oh, my God. I mean, I think I had stopped looking at myself, really, because it was just too difficult to look at. You can fool yourself to a certain period of time and say, oh, well, I'm not that overweight or whatever. But, you get up over, north of 300 and you're overweight unless you're like, 7'3" and I'm 5'8". So that's, I always said I wasn't overweight. I was just too short for my weight. I'm the perfect weight for a guy who's 7'2".
Now that you've lost, I think you said about 120 pounds, are there things that you do now that you couldn't have done before or that you didn't feel comfortable doing before?
Well, yeah. I mean, we live in a brownstone, and before this, I could not carry my daughter up to her floor, which she's on the top floor. I just couldn't do it. And, your kids come in from, you've been out to grandma or whatever, and they fall asleep in the car. And, in a normal house, you would just kind of pick them up, hoist them over your shoulder and carry them into the house. Maybe you have to walk up one flight of stairs. In our house, it's 4. And, my daughter's a good, solid little girl. And I couldn't do that before. And I've done it now. I did the New York City all city bike tour last May, 50-mile bike tour. I was in Miami a couple of weeks ago and I actually went for a run. I never thought I would ever say that. I went for a run, not voluntarily, run, the hotel's on fire, that kind of, but not, I'm going out for a run. I never thought I would say that.
My guest is Al Roker of the Today Show. He has a new holiday cookbook. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Al Roker of the Today Show, and he has a new book called Al Roker's Hassle-Free Holiday Cookbook. When you started your career, was your aspiration to be a weather person, weatherman, or just to
no.
be a broadcaster?
To be to be perfectly honest, I didn't even want to be on television. And it's a true story. I had a department chairman. I went to SUNY Oswego, which is in upstate New York, mm-hmm. and in the radio and TV department, and Dr. Lou O'Donnell said to me after we did a television performance class, he said, "Roker, you have the perfect face for radio."
We people in radio hate that joke.
I know. I understand. I could tell by the silence that was, if you just fill that in with crickets, you know, but it's true. I mean, I'm not your typical, and didn't see myself as your typical person on television. So I didn't really plan on it. But ironically, it was that same professor who put me up for the job in Syracuse, New York, when I was a sophomore to do weekend weather at the CBS station. And I got the job. And quite frankly, I mean, I love radio. I mean, I did it in college. I did it early part of my career. I love radio. But like I said, I didn't plan to do this. I didn't plan to, or I certainly didn't think that this would be my career track. I thought, well, I'd just do this till I could get a job either producing or writing, and then I'll get out of it and go on from there. But it didn't happen. I just kept getting jobs for whatever reason. I mean, I was lucky. I mean, I think, you know, for some reason, in fact, I can sum it up. I think I was in a cab. This was a couple of years after I'd gotten my job here in New York. And I got in, and the cab driver starts the meter, and we're driving, and he looks in the rearview mirror, and he said, you're Al Roker, aren't you? I said, yeah. He goes, listen, don't take this the wrong way, but you don't look like somebody who's on TV. You look like somebody I'd know. And I think, you know, that's, I really don't look like I should be on TV.
So listen, in the morning when you leave the house, do you ever call the weather?
Oh, no, because here's the deal. I've got to, my routine is this. I get up at about 3:30. I call our meteorologist, a young man named Don Sunikas. We confer over the internet. We look at maps and come up with the forecast. I leave my house at about 4:10, 4:15. I get to the gym at 4:30. I work out till 5:30. I take a steam. I'm over at the Today Show by 6:10. And then I start. So I pretty much know what the weather, even on days that I'm off, because people expect me to know what the weather is, I have to, before I leave the house, I go on the internet, I look at the maps and get an idea of what the weather is. And even still with that, my wife will say, you know, I hear they say it's going to be sunny out today. And I'll look at her and say, what is this they say crap? I'm they. It's what I say, not they, me.
What's the worst call you ever made?
Ooh, worst call. I'll never forget. It was the first time I was really wrong. I was working in Syracuse, and there's a big Italian street festival every year. And our station had a booth and the whole nine yards, and it was great. And I was saying, oh, come on down. It's going to be great. A beautiful, sunny Saturday afternoon. It'll be wonderful. And I was there with some friends. And, you know, the day was beautiful, started out. And I could see these clouds building to the northwest. And I thought, uh-oh. And they just started getting darker and darker. And I kind of grabbed my friends. I said, very slowly, walk toward the car. And as the sky really starts getting dark, I can see people saying, I know, I could hear this murmur. You know, I thought it was supposed to be nice. Al Roker said, where is Al? There he is. Get him. You know, so we break out for a run to the car just as the skies opened up and, you know, peel out of the parking lot. It was just, it was horrible.
Your father's family is from the Bahamas. Your mother's family is from Jamaica. Are there special holiday foods, I mean, special foods in general that you grew up with?
Well, yeah. It's funny because the Caribbean, there's a tradition called Boxing Day, which stems from a British tradition, but that the people in the big house, whether it's master or you know, boss or whatever, would bring, box up their leftovers and things that they didn't want right after Christmas and bring them to the servants, the slaves, whatever you want to call them. And so we would have Johnny cake. My grandmother would make Johnny cake. She'd make what's called Benny, which is a sesame candy. My father's mother would make this killer rum cake that, you know, I would wait to get this thing at college, because you'd take the top of the tin off and literally you would be knocked down by the fumes from the rum. I mean, you know, people had a contact high over half my dorm floor. But food has always been, and I think with most families, I think food is a major component of most of your holiday memories. In my family, I write this in the Al Roker's Hassle-Free Holiday Cookbook. My mother makes this dish called sweet potato poon. And it's basically a crustless sweet potato pie. And every year the same thing happens. And yet it wouldn't be the holidays without it. You have to top it with marshmallows, and then you brown them under the broiler. And my mother would have the broiler open, and she'd be watching the marshmallows brown because they'll catch fire pretty quickly. And one of us will go and distract her. Say, Mom, where's the serving spoons? Mom, do you have the coasters? Mom, and she'll look away for about 30 seconds, and before you know it, the marshmallows have caught fire. So it's not really the holidays in our house unless the smoke detector goes off. But it's fun.
Well, Al Roker, I wish you happy holidays. Thank you very
too,
much
Terry.
For talking with us.
Thank you.
Al Roker's new book is called Al Roker's Hassle-Free Holiday Cookbook.